Blog Talk Radio.
One night, Farmer Brown was taking the air after locking up the barn with the greatest of care. Then down in the hen house, somebody stirred when he shouted, "Who's there? Who's there? I'm telling the truth. This is what he heard. You can believe it or not. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So quiet yourself. Stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. We chickens trying to sleep, and you bust in and hobble, 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 hobble with your chin. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. You're stomping around and shaking the ground. You raising up a powerful dust. We chickens trying to sleep. You bust in and hobble, 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 hobble. It's a sin. Tomorrow is a busy day. We got things to do. We got eggs to lay, worms to dig, grounds to scratch. And it takes a lot of setting, getting chicks to hatch. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So quiet yourself. Stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. And kindly point that gun the other way. And hobble, hobble, hobble off and hit the hay. Ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. Shh, quiet yourself and stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. We chickens trying to sleep and you bust in and baba oodle, baba oodle with your chin. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. Now there ain't nobody here at all. You're stomping around and shaking the ground while you raising up a powerful dust. We chickens trying to sleep and you bust in and yaggity, 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 it's a sin. Tomorrow is a busy day. We got things to do, we got eggs to lay, worms to dig, grounds to scratch. And it takes a lot of setting, getting chicks to hatch. Now there ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. Shh, now quiet yourself and stop that fuss, cause there ain't nobody here but us. And kind of point that gun the other way. And hobble, hobble, hobble off and hit the hay.
Attaboy, let your hair down, Phil. James Bostic here, Conservative Perspective. And tonight, we are live. And we're doing this from Blog Talk Radio. And you go to blogtalkradio.com. And you type in Patriot Nation Radio Network, and that's where you'll find us. We do it Tuesdays and Thursdays live, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We also have a recorded version of the show that goes out. It goes to microphone on Sundays, and it goes out on the Talk America Radio Network, talkamericaradio.org. You go there, and they have a couple of different audio streaming channels. They have the Liberty and the Justice Stream, ACP, of course, heard various times throughout the day and week on either one of those streams. Well, 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 well. Where do we start, man? There's a boatload of crap going on. Just like the bug says in the teaser, you know, we're coming down to the wire. I'm just a little over 2 weeks away, and we will be face-to-face against the left in the midterm election. So who's who? What's what? Well, we're gonna be talking about just those things this evening. Headlines, excuse me, headlines have been written proclaiming that a caravan of migrants is heading for the United States-Mexican border. Sometimes the people who are heading north through Central America are referred to as refugees or immigrants. Now, these terms are used for a specific reason, and these terms are used because they are designed to downplay the threat that these individuals pose and assuage the fears that this may understandably engender in America. You see, words do indeed matter. In a point of fact, the following words are the ones that the Immigration and Nationality Act define an alien as being, and that is any person, not a citizen or a national of the United States. There's no insult in this term alien, or in the definition of alien. But there is, however, clarity. They're not undocumented workers. They're not illegal immigrants. They're not illegal migrants. They're none of those things. They are illegal aliens. And the obvious goal of the radical left is to obfuscate the truth through Orwellian use of language that has been misportrayed as political correctness. Remarkably, okay, the left doesn't like the word alien. And you'll find people that kind of cringe when you say that. Good. Let them. The left didn't have any problem using the term alien when they needed a word that began with the letter A for the DREAM Act. And the DREAM Act, of course, DREAM is an acronym for Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors. Aliens. And, you know, while we're on the topic of words, maybe we ought to change that term caravan for invasion. Now, invasion is defined in part as an incursion by a large number of people or things into a place or a sphere of activity or an unwelcome intrusion into another person's domain. Now, when we look at Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, it provides the following guarantee, that the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government, and we have that. What they're talking about is a representative republic, and shall protect each of them, referring to the states, against invasion and on application of the legislature or of the executive against domestic violence. Now, they're not talking about wife beaten or husband beaten here. They're talking about domestic terrorism. Now, here's something you may not have known. Now, what I'm talking about, of course, you know, we have this caravan coming now. And they came from the Honduras, and they're coming north. So they crash the Honduran-Guatemalan border. And then from Honduras, they move north through Guatemala. They come to the Guatemalan-Mexico border, Mexican border, and they crash through it. And currently, they're on their way to the United States. They're, I think, probably less than 1,000 miles away right now. And this is a group of thousands of people. And I've seen the estimates run as high as 10,000, maybe even more. And we have some questions about this. Now, they're coming from Honduras, and they've been coming. They've been talking about it for days now. And I don't know if you've heard about this, but in a startling revelation in Guatemala, the president of Guatemala announced in their country's largest newspaper, get this, nearly 100 ISIS terrorists were apprehended in Guatemala. A 100 ISIS terrorists were apprehended in Guatemala. Now, this caravan, this invasion, is thousands of people, maybe 10,000, maybe more. I'm sure there, and I'm sure that 100, and that's a heck of a haul. And the Guatemalan government is to be commended for stopping these people and catching them. You know, there's probably, you know, where there's 100, there's probably 100 more. Now, this growing mob of aspiring illegal aliens is heading to the United States, purportedly to seek political asylum here. And when they were interviewed by reporters, some of the people claimed that they were living in poverty and they wanted better opportunities in the United States, while others talked about the fear of violence in their home country. Well, they've undoubtedly been encouraged by the leadership of the Democrat Party, which treats illegal aliens with reverence while castigating ICE agents who routinely, on a daily basis, go into harm's way to investigate and arrest illegal aliens that are engaged in criminal activities here in America. Certainly, the demands made by the leaders of the Democrat Party that ICE be disbanded altogether and all interior enforcement of our immigration laws be terminated are music to the ears of the saints, because they want to get in here, man. They want to get busy. sanctuary cities. They beckon illegal aliens and the criminals and the gang members and the fugitives and the terrorists among them, encouraging them and inducing them to head to the United States and claim asylum. But here's the problem. And this is just how it's supposed to work. And it's like this. When you flee your native country, ostensibly to seek political asylum, what you're supposed to do, and the way this is supposed to work, is that you're supposed to apply for asylum in the first country that you get to. So in other words, all these folks from Honduras going into Guatemala, for example, should be applying for asylum in Guatemala. Furthermore, asylum claims are supposed to be solely based on the applicants demonstrating a credible fear that they face persecution or something worse because of either their race, their religion, their political views, or other such factors. But fleeing violence in general in their home country or seeking economic opportunities that aren't available in their home country, these are not considered grounds for asylum. Now, this summer in June, Attorney General Jeff Sessions laid out his concerns about the misuse of political asylum in prepared remarks that he delivered when he addressed the Executive Office for Immigration Review and the Legal Training Program. Here's an excerpt from it. It's pretty important what he says here. The asylum system is being abused to the detriment of the rule of law, sound public policy, and public safety, and to the detriment of people with just claims. Saying a few simple words, claiming a fear of return, is now transforming a straightforward arrest for illegal entry and immediate return into a long, prolonged, drawn-out legal process where an alien can be released from custody in the United States and possibly never show up for an immigration hearing. It's a large part of what is accurately being called catch and release. Now, beginning in 2009, more and more aliens who passed an initial U.S. Customs Immigration Service credible fear review were released from custody into the United States pending a full hearing. So powerful incentives had been created for illegal aliens to come here and then claim a fear of return. In effect, word spread that by asserting this fear, they could remain in the United States one way or another. And far too often, that rumor proved to be true. Attorney General Sessions noted that while the number of illegal entrants increased dramatically, and with that increase, the number of credible fear claims skyrocketed, the percentage of claims that were approved by the immigration judges declined. And he went on to state for the last 5 years, only 20% of claims were found, only 20% of all the claims were found to be valid by immigration law judges. And here's another thing that we have to look at. The cooperation between Middle Eastern terrorists and the drug cartels and the crime syndicates in Latin America, for example, Hezbollah's Latin American networks have increasingly cooperated with cartels, often with the assistance of local corrupt politicians, and there ain't no shortage of corrupt politicians in Central America. And this cooperation included laundering of drug money, arranging for multi-ton shipments of cocaine to the United States and Europe, or directly distributing and selling illicit substances to distant markets. Now, the proceeds from these activities finance Hezbollah's arms procurement programs, its terror activities overseas, its hold on Lebanon's political system, and its efforts in both Lebanon and overseas to keep Shia communities loyal to its cause and, more importantly, complicit in its endeavors. This toxic crime-terror nexus that we see, this intersectionality between the drug cartels in Mexico and South America and Hezbollah and Hamas, these Middle Eastern terrorist groups, is fueling both this rising threat of global jihadism, in addition to the collapse of law and order across South America, that's helping drive drugs and people northward into the states. It's sustaining Hezbollah's growing financial needs. It's helping Iran and Hezbollah consolidate a local constituency in multiple countries across Latin America. So in other words, they're recruiting in South America. They're establishing cells and enclaves. This is not good. So in other words, it's facilitating their efforts to maintain safe havens for terrorists and a continent-wide terror infrastructure that they can use to attack U.S. targets. So, holy cow. This is a very, very serious issue. And the thing of it is, the Obama administration knew this crap was serious. And they knew what would happen if they looked the other way. And that's why they looked the other way. Have you seen pictures of these cats as they're coming through? Brand new clothes, cell phones, their own camera crews, brand new baby strollers. Now, these guys are supposed to be poor, downtrodden refugees. Honduras, Guatemala. They're wearing heel figure crap. They're not hand-me-downs. This stuff looks new. It looks clean. Some of those really fancy yuppie-style three-wheel baby strollers. Where in the world is this coming from? Somebody's paying for this. Somebody is fronting the money for this. They have to be. These are not sophisticated people. Okay, the lower class, the poor people of Honduras and Guatemala. We're not talking about an intellectual elite. We're not talking about a politically woke population. These people are being moved in this direction, and they're being supplied with the necessary things to get them here. And if they lose some, you know, a couple kids get killed, an old person dies, a young person dies, a married couple dies, anybody dies, they're not going to worry about it too much because it's going to add to that level of sympathy that they're trying to generate. And the media will know what to do with that. They'll make the most efficacious use possible of it. So that leads us to this question. Who is financing the Honduras invasion of illegal aliens? Could be as many as 10,000 of these cats snaking their way from Honduras through Guatemala, through Mexico, to enter the U.S. right here, right in time for midterms. How about that, America? Well, Representative Louie Gohmert of Texas has got a pretty sensible suggestion for finding this out. Use the RICO statutes. He was on Fox News and Gohmert had this to say. We have got to have the DOJ investigate where the funding is coming from to send these thousands and thousands of people to the U.S. You can use the RICO Act to go after them. And that's the, what is that? That's the Racketeering and Interstate Crime Organization Act, RICO. And the question, which a fundamentally incurious media shows no signs of wanting to answer, is absolutely worth asking, given the expense, when we think about it, that the taxpayers are going to be saddled with as thousands of these people openly climb over border fences that they dare border officials to fire on them or stop them. They worm their way in through asylum and legal maneuvering. They put up big sob stories with photos of moms and crying children as a means to get in and get the benefit packages. It's a certainty. It's a guarantee that quite a few of them probably going to get in. Unless the president can genuinely be effective at stopping them, and right now, that's not a certainty. So who is it? Excuse me. Is it George Soros, the hedge fund left-wing billionaire James Bond villain of chaos, who vowed to shell out $500 million for immigrants a few years back? You remember him? Democrats, the same people who had tens of millions to pay for fake dossier in a bid to win an election and who have lately been struggling to win the Latino vote? Or is it, as a lot of people suspect, Chavista, Venezuelan oil money? In other words, the leftover oligarchs from Hugo Chavez's reign in Venezuela, which is now Maduro country. So, you know, and Chavista said he wanted to flood America with indigent migrants, and he wanted to do that as a means of spreading the revolution northward. Socialism, communism, pinkos, reds, God, I hate them. John Brennan, I haven't forgot about you, John boy. You're still on my mind, pal. Got you on the back burner, but I'm watching. I'm watching your pot, dude. And we're going to stir you if you don't even. Okay, so, but anyway, here's the thing. Somebody has to be financing it, because these illegal aliens are leaving vast troves of trash as they move through Mexico, presumably because they are climbing aboard pre-arranged and paid for trucks to travel on. Trucks are expensive. If this caravan has a couple of thousand miles to go, then why did they leave behind all this stuff they would need to survive? They've left the strollers behind. What, you know, and that's a good example. There's a stroller. Like I said, there's a picture of a mom tossing. I saw it. I can't remember where. Maybe Daily Caller. Maybe. I'm not sure. Like I said, one of those fancy three-wheel yuppie strollers. I don't know. They can't be cheap. This one didn't look cheap. Well, what mom or dad would leave that behind and then make the choice to carry their kid for the next 2,000 miles? Well, they wouldn't. 389 bucks. Okay. Somebody looked it up. Okay. In the caravan invasion featuring a Graco jogger stroller. Like I said, it's a fancy one. 400 bucks. Now, where the hell does a Honduran immigrant, a refugee, come up with 389 Yankee greenbacks to get one of these strollers? And that's expensive, but here's the problem. The thing that's going to be even more expensive are the costs each of these migrants and their children will take from the U.S., from educating them and feeding them and housing them and medicating them and lawyering them and policing them and jailing them and everything else that the migrants, the aliens, get in their vast benefit packages once in, legally or not. That's what happens. Gavin Newsom, currently running for governor of California, says he's going to give them free health care, which has got to be a magnet. They also, as Mickey Kouse from Breitbart has repeatedly noted, these guys drive down wages for the poorest of Americans because they're working under the table for even less than the poor Americans do. They send money back home. That leaves American cities underdeveloped as all the capital flows out and serves to prop up the corrupt governments of the countries that these people left behind. So you know what? As taxpayers, we absolutely should be looking in to who it is that wants to destroy our rule of law, make our borders meaningless, and who wants to foist huge benefit packages on the foreign invaders coming to the U.S. illegally on our dime. Louis Gohmert's on to something here, and these people need to take him very, very seriously. And if you've noticed, Democrats aren't saying a word about this. As a matter of fact, Democrat leaders are urging their party's 2018 candidates to just go ahead and ignore the migration issues, even as these guys are walking and being trucked and running on rickety railroads through Mexico. On Saturday, this is what Nancy Pelosi and Senator Chuck Schumer told Democrat candidates to do as far as just ignore public worries about migration. The president is desperate to change the subject from health care to immigration because he knows that health care is the number one issue that Americans care about. Well, that's not true. Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, Republicans in Washington are making a mess of our health care system, causing premiums to increase, and care to decrease while threatening to gut protections for pre-existing conditions. Democrats are focused like a laser on health care and will not be diverted. It's an invasion, folks. It's an invasion. Now, the Democrats aren't going to say anything about this invasion because it is their intention that once these adults get into the United States, they're going to have operatives. They're going to have people standing by to get these cats registered to vote. Now, maybe they don't vote in the midterms, okay, because there's like a 20-day process where you're locked up inside the immigration system while they take a look at you and adjudicate your case. Then the ones that get through, they're going to be registered to vote Democrat. And they're going to tell these guys, get out there and vote. Vote early, vote often. And that's what they're going to try and do. It's what they've been trying to do. That's the whole point in this issue of calling them. And again, they use these words deliberately to gain a sympathetic cast to these people. Every day here in the United States, we have an American citizen of some kind. A kid, an old man, an old woman, a person with some kind of handicap, homeless citizens, American citizens, homeless veterans. And here's the thing. Until every single one of those people is cared for and demonstrably proved to have no significant want, and that's not unreasonable. These are American citizens. Until every one of these kids that doesn't have a decent pair of shoes gets a pair of shoes or has a coat, gets a coat, then none of these other people need to be taken care of. Why? Because the citizenship is the priority, not the alien invader, the citizen. You can't tell me this can't be done. You can tell me it won't be done, and you can tell me all the reasons it isn't going to be done, but you cannot tell me that it cannot be done. Well, tell you what, we're down to the bottom of the hour, and I'm about talked out for now. I got to get something to drink, and as I say so many times, all this talking makes a fellow thirsty. And I'm scrolling through. You know what I'm doing. I'm scrolling through right now. And here we go. We will be back with more of ACP after this brief musical interlude right here on Blog Talk Radio through the studios of the Patriot Nation Radio Network.
lover's lane with anyone else but me.
Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowing reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. They made him blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he couldn't jam. The captain seemed to understand, because the next day the cap went out and drafted a band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. A toot, a toot, a toot-de-la-da, toot-de-rosy-day to the bar. In boogie rhythm, he can't blow a note unless the bass and guitar is playing with him. He makes the company jump when he plays reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B.
He was a boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. When he plays, he makes the company jump A to the bar. He's a boogie boogie bugle boy of Company B. Do 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 da da do da da do do. He blows it A to the bar. He can't blow a note if the bass and guitar isn't with him. And the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's a boogie boogie bugle boy of Company B.
Maxine, Patty, and Laverne, my favorite girls. That's, of course, the Andrews sisters. James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective on blogtalkradio.com. Blogtalkradio.com, you go there, you type in the Patriot Nation Radio Network, and you'll find us here live Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern time. You know, we talked about this caravan. And again, we're down to the wire. We've got just a couple weeks away from the midterms. Midterms, I feel confident that we must leave nothing to chance. We cannot become complacent. We must be ready. Vote early if you can, but you vote. We have to. There's no choice about it. Last week, I found a go-to series from Prager University, the differences between left and right. And we looked at one last week. We're going to look at another one tonight. The second in that series. Actually, I got a couple of things from Prager we're going to listen to tonight. I love them because they're usually no more than about 5 or 6 minutes. They are compact. They are concise. They are to the point. And I think, you know, with any common sense, right-thinking individual, they usually resonate and resonate pretty strongly. The second in our series of left versus right with Dennis Prager. Here it is. I'm going to pull it up now.
A fundamental difference between left and right concerns how each assesses public policies. The right asks, does it do good? The left is more likely to ask a different question. Take the minimum wage, for example. In 1987, the New York Times editorialized against any minimum wage. The title of the editorial said it all. The right minimum wage, $0.00. There's a virtual consensus among economists, wrote the Times editorial, that the minimum wage is an idea whose time has passed. Raising the minimum wage by a substantial amount would price working people out of the job market. Why did the New York Times editorialize against the minimum wage? Because it asked the question, does it do good? But 27 years later, the same New York Times editorial page wrote the very opposite of what it had written in 1987 and called for a major increase in the minimum wage. In that time, the Times editorial page had moved further and further left and was now preoccupied not with the question, does it do good, but with the question, does it feel good? And it feels good to raise poor people's minimum wage.
Yes.
A second example is affirmative action. Study after study, and more importantly, common sense and facts, has shown the negative effects that race-based affirmative action has had on many black students. Lowering college admission standards for black applicants has ensured a number of awful results. Just to cite one, more black students fail to graduate college. Why? Because too many have been admitted to a college that demands more academic rigor than they are prepared for. Rather than attend a school that matches their academic skills, a school where they might thrive, they too often fail at the more demanding school that lowered its standards to admit them. It's clear that supporters of race-based affirmative action ask, does it feel good, rather than does it do good? A third example is pacifism and other forms of peace activism. Many people on the left have a soft spot for pacifism, the belief that killing another human being is always wrong. Not all leftists are pacifists, but pacifism almost always emanates from the left, and just about all leftists support peace activism, peace studies, and whatever else contains the word peace. The right, on the other hand, while just as desirous of peace as the left, what conservative parent wants their child to die in battle, knows that pacifism and most peace activists increase the chances of war, not peace. Nothing guarantees the triumph of evil like refusing to fight it. Great evil is therefore never defeated by peace activists, but by superior military might. The Allied victory in World War II is an obvious example. And violent Islamists today need to be killed before they behead, enslave, and torture more innocents. Supporters of pacifism, peace studies, American nuclear disarmament, and American military withdrawal from countries in which it has fought do not ask, does it do good? Because it almost never does good. Did the total withdrawal of America from Iraq do good? Of course not. It led to the rise of Islamic State with its mass murder and torture. Did the American withdrawal from Vietnam do good? No. It led to the violent communist takeover of South Vietnam. On the other hand, because American troops did not leave South Korea, Japan, and Germany, those countries have become three of the most prosperous and free countries in the world. So then, why do liberals support a higher minimum wage if it doesn't do good? Because it makes them feel good about themselves. We liberals, unlike conservatives, care about the poor. Why do liberals support race-based affirmative action? For the same reason. It makes liberals feel good about themselves. They appear to be righting the wrongs of historical racism. And the same holds true for left-wing peace activism. It's nice to think of oneself as a peace activist. All this helps to explain why young people are so much more likely to be liberal than conservative. They haven't lived long enough to really know what does good, but they do know what feels good. As society moves further and further to the left, so does the preoccupation with feeling good over doing good. The world is getting worse and worse, but many people are feeling better and better about themselves while it does. I'm Dennis Prager.
There you go. Simple question. Does it do good or does it feel good? Are you interested in bringing about results, or is it more important to signify intention? For example, back to the illegal alien thing. Seen a lot of people post things over the summer about how ill-treated these people are because the United States government was separating. Hold on a moment. That's you. Excuse me. That the United States government, people were upset because they saw, or what they claimed was the United States government separating children, ripping children from their families. What the United States government was doing was separating children from human traffickers, from sexual predators. But that doesn't sell well with your liberal people, your left-wing types. So we have to spin it another way to keep these people ginned up. I know what we'll do. We'll tell them that Donald Trump is ripping babies from families, and he's put them in boxes and in cages so that later on we can freeze dry them and turn them into MREs for the troops. Yeah, that's what we'll tell. And there are people who believe this. And they'll talk terrible things about Donald Trump. They'll talk about the Immigration Naturalization Service. They'll talk about American government. They'll talk about all these things. Never mind that not a bit of it's true. And never mind that not one of these people, and I know some of them personally, not one of these people has ever made a post saying, you know what, screw you, Donald Trump. And here's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to take my money, my own personal money, my stash, my scratch, and I'm going to sponsor one of these families to come into the United States. I'm going to pay for them to do it. And you can't stop me, Donald Trump. Take that. And they could. They absolutely could. They could foster one of these families to come over here, and they could fork out the cash to make it happen. But do they? No, because they're fake-ass posers. Again, it's not about doing good. It's about feeling good. It's not about result. It's about intent. And you know what? There have been a boatload of things I have intended to do in my life. I've had grand intentions. ambitious intent. I've had good intentions too. But the grand intentions and the good intentions and even the bad intentions, they're nothing. Without results, they're just intentions. And what is intention? Not much. It's not much. But they're not going to do that. They're not going to fork out their own money. They're just going to complain about it, and they're going to put their crap on Facebook so everybody will see how woke they are. You know, and now we're going to move on. I've got another clip I want to play for you, another Dennis Prager clip. It's called The American Trinity. And last week also we talked about, and I think I'm going to go ahead and give credit to Michael Savage for it. I never heard it anywhere before I started hearing him saying it. And I'm sure maybe someone somewhere said something similar. But it comes down to this. Those things, those pillars which support a state or a nation, and that's what I'm talking about when I say a state, are its borders, its language, and its culture. Well, those things are critical. Because it is through our borders, our common language, and our common culture that we come up with another set of three pillars. And Dennis Prager calls them the American Trinity. Now, the reason I'm sharing this stuff with you so you can hear the differences fundamentally between right and left. Intuitively, you guys know this stuff. You're not stupid. You're listening to me. No. Seriously, though, it has been statistically proven that individuals, men and women, who listen to political talk radio, most specifically conservative political talk radio or podcasts like we're doing here, are inherently head and shoulders above the rest of the folks when it comes to intellectual prowess. We're smarter. I don't know why, but we are. It's just what they say. And I'm not saying it. I'm just talking to you about the guy who said it, and I'm inclined to agree with him. But there's this thing that Dennis Prager calls the American Trinity, and I'm going to pull that up because you know the differences. You know, just like you know the differences between right and wrong, good and bad, you know the differences between left and right. Intuitively, you know. But it's always good to have somebody who's pretty smart articulate them. And I know with me, when I hear guys like Dennis Prager or Mark Levin or Mike Savage, for example, or any of the people that I read, Tommy Lifson and some of the other guys at American Thinker, David Horowitz from Front Page Mag, these guys, they're head and shoulders above me. And when they talk and when they have something to say, I'm going to pay attention to it. And that's all I'm doing with you guys is just sharing that right here. This, again, Dennis Prager expounding upon the American Trinity.
Race and ethnicity have defined every nation on Earth, except one, the United States of America. It is defined by values. So to understand America, you have to understand American values. They are, one, e pluribus unum, two, liberty, three, in God we trust. I call this the American Trinity. I made up the name, but I didn't make up the values. They are on every American coin. The first, e pluribus unum, is Latin, meaning out of many, one. When first adopted as an American motto, shortly after the American founding in 1776, it referred to the 13 American colonies becoming one nation. Over time, however, most Americans understood the motto to mean one people from many backgrounds. To quote the E Pluribus Unum Project, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities, over the years, E Pluribus Unum has also served as a reminder of America's bold attempt to make one unified nation of people from many different backgrounds and beliefs. In other words, America doesn't care about your national or ethnic origins. This explains why people who immigrate to America assimilate faster and more fully than immigrants to any other country. Most of those who have immigrated to Europe from, for example, Turkey, as millions have, are not considered fully German by fellow Germans or fully Swedish by fellow Swedes or fully Spanish by fellow Spaniards. This is even true of the children and grandchildren of those immigrants. And just as important, few of those immigrants or their children or grandchildren will ever feel fully German, Swedish, or Spanish. But a Turk who immigrates to the United States will be regarded as fully American as any other American, the moment he or she becomes a citizen. And they, and certainly their children, will feel fully American. Of course, America has not always lived up to this e pluribus unum ideal, but the ideal was always there, and it was applied to virtually every immigrant to America. The second component of the American Trinity is liberty. Now you might ask, didn't the French Revolution also enshrine liberty as a central national value? Wasn't its motto liberty, equality, fraternity? The answer is yes. America is hardly the only country to enshrine liberty. It is the only country to enshrine liberty e pluribus unum and in God we trust. What's the difference? The difference is this. The moment you affirm equality, as the French Revolution did, you will lose liberty. It is a basic American value that all human beings are born equal and all must be equal before the law. But ending up equal, that's a French and European value. And if you want people to end up equal, you must deprive them of liberty, which is exactly what happened right after the French Revolution and in every other society that made equality its national goal. America gives people the liberty to end up wherever their abilities, work ethic, and luck take them, meaning unequal. Therefore, professional athletes will make more money than teachers or doctors. That may be unfortunate, but that is what liberty allows. If you want equality, you will tell people how much they can earn, and that means the end of liberty. And third, in God we trust. Unlike almost every other country, America never had a state religion. But it was founded on the principle that God, specifically the God of the Bible, is the source of moral values. As the Declaration of Independence put it, all people are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. In other words, rights come from God, not from men. If rights are given by men, men can take them away. The American Trinity is the reason America became the world's freest and most prosperous country. But many Americans want to, in the words of former President Barack Obama, fundamentally transform it. They wish to replace American values with European values. Equality of result and an ever-expanding state, which greatly reduce individual freedom. The celebration of ethnic and racial identity, which is the opposite of e pluribus unum, and the removal of God as the source of morality and rights. Which set of values Americans adopt will determine whether America remains free, prosperous, and the force for good in the world that it has been. With the exception of the Civil War, this is the greatest internal battle in American history. I'm Dennis Prager.
That's no exaggeration. That's not drama. That's not theatrics. This coming election, and you hear it every election. You know, this may be the most important election in our lifetime. Ted, back to you, John. And it just, you know, and there were times, because I guess as human beings, as people, sometimes it's difficult for us to see further down the road than we're used to seeing. And it takes a little bit of work to work on, you know, that long range vision, because you have the media keeping us in the immediacy of the moment. You have the news people and Hollywood and the pundits and the heads and the newspapers and the editorialists and all these different people trying to keep us focused on these issues of immediacy, as though they have to be solved now. We've got to look at them now. We've got to worry about them now. And there is a certain legitimacy to that, because we do have pending issues that we need to work through. It's just that it's not always the issues that they tell us that they are. Now, what it comes down to, we're down to the last 5 minutes. I'm going to wrap this up because I'm tired. In less than 2 weeks, or right around 2 weeks, we're going to be going face-to-face against the left in this midterm election. Now, this is an important election. Is it the most important election of our lives? I don't know. It could be. It could be. I'm not going to say that it isn't, but I'm probably going to raise an eyebrow over the possibility that it really is, because everybody says that. They say it every damn election cycle, over one issue or another, or one major party plank addition or another, whatever it is. But this is pretty important. As a matter of fact, when it comes to appointing the stewards of our government who are going to see to the protection and the maintenance and the defense of those rights and those liberties, isn't every election the most important election of all time? Look how many stooges are in what, Republican and Democrat both. Look how many stooges, how many corrupt knotheads, how many ne'er-do-wells, how many villains are in Washington, D.C. right now. Harry Truman once said, it is impossible, impossible for an honest man to get rich in politics. 30-some, 40-some years later, Orrin Hatch said, it is impossible, impossible to go to Washington, D.C. and return an honest man. Term limits. I'm not going to get into that. We don't have any time. But those are the points that I wanted to make. Yeah, this election coming up is pretty serious. And I'm loath as I am to say this. There are going to be shaky Republicans that you're going to not want to vote for. But if you don't vote for them, it's a half a vote for another Democrat. And I'm talking on the state and local level. Get them in there. Get them in there. Thank you, Gwendolyn. Get them in there. Vote. Vote conservative. Vote Constitution. Vote Republican. It's rare that I say something like that, but I think this time, yeah, we need to. We need to provide as strong a bulwark against the left and socialism and Marxism as we conceivably can. That's all the time we've got. I'm going to say goodnight right now. I want to thank you guys for allowing me the opportunity to visit with you. Thank you. And talk a little bit about everything that's been going on, because we indeed live in interesting times. We will be back on Thursday, live, 7 p.m. Eastern time, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, God bless each and every one of you. God bless the United States. And we'll see you on Thursday. Take care. Thank you.